word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
For word of mouth.
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 This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott. Coming up, high-pitched squeals, old fogey music, and other bizarre schemes to scare off loitering teens. And mead, the favorite drinks of monks and Vikings, makes a comeback in New Hampshire. Also, the son of a ladies' man, musician Adam Cohen, dares to pick up the mantle of his legendary father, Leonard. But we begin with tending a legacy that stretches far beyond the family tree. Forests cover 75% of the Northeast, and the vast majority of that land is owned by families or individuals. About 1.5 million people, in fact, living in rural areas, but not necessarily raised with rural knowledge or skills for managing their woods. Stephen Long is a family forest owner and founding editor of the Northern Woodlands magazine. His new book, More Than a Woodlot, Getting the Most from Your Family Forest, provides a solid foundation for foresters, family foresters, seeking an ecological approach to preservation, to safeguarding habitats, sustainable foresting, or responsible ways to capitalize on a woodlot. Stephen Long, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thank you so much. Very nice to be here, Virginia.
I'm glad you're here. Historic shifts all along that you chart those at the beginning of the book. How forests have changed here, especially in the Northeast. And we're talking about New England for the most part, New York.
Yeah.
There was always this kind of utilitarian view of the forest. You know, it was for living off of. It was a way to settle the land. What's changed?
Well, when Europeans arrived, we had probably 98% forests, and in very short period of time, most of that forest in New Hampshire, for instance, 55% of that forest was cleared over the course of, say, the first 100 years. So it was cleared not because of an interest in logging, but it was cleared for agriculture. People were settling this land. And so across the Northeast, the forests were cut. They were used for fuel. They were used for building houses. And the woods that remained, the 45% that stayed behind, were the woodlots. They were the place where people continued to get their fuel from. Back in those days, you could easily burn 20 cords of wood in a year. Drafty farmhouses, fireplaces. So it was fuel at that time. And the forests have grown back tremendously since then. In New Hampshire, we're at about 84% forested. Remarkable turnaround in that period of time. And it's largely because New Hampshire is no longer an agricultural state. Neither is Vermont, New York, a little bit less so. They continue to have strong ag.
And now things have shifted. I mean, out west, of course, you find a lot of huge land holdings owned by corporations or government tracts of land. Here, many more family owners, individual owners, you know, maintaining millions of acres of forestry. How did that shift happen here, particularly in New England?
Since New England was settled, it's been owned by individuals. There was not a lot of land kept back for the public. And in areas that were settled for agriculture, the pieces of land were, at that time, in the 100-acre range. People would buy, sell, accumulate, get rid of. And so it's shifted over time. Now, more and more people are wanting to live in the rural areas. Mm-hmm. They just find it. They want to get their little bit of heaven. Maybe they're in a situation where they can commute, digitally commute. They can use their cell, their internet connection, and do business from home. It's remarkable the change of demographics in the rural areas. People are no longer there because they're tied to the land. Mm. They want to escape the cities, the suburbs. I mean, so we have an increasingly urban and suburban background in our demographic.
Right, and as you point out, these people were not raised knowing how to maintain forests, and that's part of what your book is about, sort of creating a foundation of knowledge. You yourself are not a forester.
That's
you,
right.
But you've been writing about forestry for many, many years, and you tend to big forest. So what has your approach been to be actively engaged in your forest? Do you come up with a plan? Do you work with a forester? I mean, what is your sort of management strategy?
Sure. That's really at the heart of the book. I've been writing about forestry for about 25 years. Started Northern Woodlands with a partner 17 years ago. I've been covering this subject all this time, but I would never dream of trying to manage my own land on my own. I just don't know enough to do that. So I have a forester who understands the processes, who manages the land for us. He's got a timber inventory. We've done nature inventory. So we understand what's on our land. I'm on the land all the time. I hunt, I walk, take the dog for walks, take the grandchildren for walks, introduce them to the wonders that are in the woods. But you really need an expert if you're going to do it right. And I just wouldn't try to do it on my own because I wouldn't succeed and I would feel really bad.
We're talking with Stephen Long and about the hidden value of the forest many of us take for granted, the ones around our homes. Stephen Long is the author of the new book, More Than a Woodlot, Getting the Most from Your Family Forest. And that's a question about getting the most. I mean, a lot of people, when they hear about commercial value in forests, that's regarded as a kind of exploitation. Now, you take a very different approach that managing land responsibly is a great way to simultaneously take good care of the forest and also harvest enough to cover the costs. I mean, let's face it, it's become a lot more expensive here in New Hampshire, especially where property taxes are the main tax base, to maintain a good acreage of forest.
That's right. It's expensive to own land and to hold on to land. There's a really good, solid current use program in New Hampshire in which people who make a commitment not to develop their land are given a tax break. So that's a very helpful program. But if you're interested in working with your woods, there are ways to make money from your woods. And the primary way is through timber sales. Mm. And the one thing that you really need to keep in mind is that there are very, very different values of the products in your woods. Trees that are formed really, really nicely, they're close to a perfect cylinder, they look like a telephone pole with a really nice crown on it. Those trees have real value. The ones that are misshapen have less value, and they're more of more use for firewood or for pulp. And so the goal of any good forest management program is to increase the value of the woods, and that is to take away as much of the poorly formed wood as you can, leaving behind the best. So you're constantly improving the value of your woods. And that's the only real way, I think, that you can make a real go of this. Otherwise, if you mine your land for all the value that's on it, you've really lost any future potential value. And so, and if you do that, and it comes time, there's a financial setback. Tuition for kids, mm-hmm. Various things come up, medical emergencies. People turn to their woodlot for as if it's a bank account.
A kind
account.
Of ATM.
Yeah, yeah. And if you do that, you really run the risk that the bank account is empty. And then what do? Well, then you sell the land or you sell a chunk of the land. The main thing that I'm hoping to get across in this book is to give people a really good reason to continue owning land. Forest land is just such an amazing thing to own, and to I spend so much time in it. I love it. I talk to people who love their wood, cut firewood, spend all sorts of time in it. And there's just such tremendous value in it for you individually. There's also tremendous value to society at large. We get clean water, we get clean air, we get carbon storage. We have habitat for wildlife, the wildlife that we all want to see. All these things are tied up in the forest and the incredible values in the forest. And those values start to erode when you have to sell that piece of land, turn it into building lots. And it's so the main value that I see in More Than a Woodlot and in all of the work that we've done is to try to keep the forest as much as we possibly can and intact forest, because it does so much for all of us.
Say a family has a small enough lot or does not have the financial need to turn it into, let's say, a commercial operation like logging, you know, responsible logging, for example, but just wants to manage or preserve their family woodlot. Now, do they need a management plan? Say they want to encourage habitats for animals or birds.
Then even more reason to have a management plan. There are very, very specific things that you can do to improve the habitat for certain species. Some species have needs for a more open woods. So they would want a mature canopy that's open underneath. Others want a denser, a younger forest. And the diversity in the woods is such is the key to all this. So a management plan is your way of figuring out what works best where. It takes into consideration what you have and what it can become. And a forester can really help you to understand that. You can't push a forest in a direction that it doesn't want to go. You can't get maple sugar from woods that don't have maples. You can't be a deer yard if you don't have softwoods. So you have to look at what you have and try to figure out, well, where can this go? And if, I mean, that's management. Even if you're not really talking about trying to make a lot of money from a timber sale, it's still management.
So you're talking about keeping forests in the hands of people so they don't have to sell it for development. And this, of course, extends beyond our lifetimes. You even write about estate planning for forests. So what's involved with that? What kind of questions have to be asked?
Well, we're at the point right now where so much of our land, of our forest land, is in the hands of people 65 and older. So there's going to be a tremendous turnover of land. It's already started, but there's going to be a tremendous turnover in the next 10, 20 years. And that can happen either with a plan in mind, or it can happen that you read the will and the land is deeded to five children. And how are the five children going to figure out what to do with that land? So there's a lot of things that can be done to prevent getting into a situation where you've handed this beautiful forest to people who really won't be in a position to do the right thing with it. So you can, for instance, if you have the five kids, you can set up an LLC, and in that LLC you could vest these five children over time so that they become owners of the woodland over time, and then then they don't need to subdivide the land to get any value. They could, because it's all, they all own an equal share. If someone wants to get out, then there can be mechanisms for doing that. But the mechanisms would not involve cutting up the forest land. So the land would continue to be intact.
It's a challenge that we're going to see over and over again. Stephen Long,
that's right.
I want to thank you so much. We spoke a lot about the philosophy today, but there's so much practical advice in here on, you know, pests and insects and setting up habitats for wildlife. It's really an incredible resource. And Stephen Long is the founder of Northern Woods Magazine. He is also the author of More Than a Woodlot, Getting the Most from Your Family Forest. And we've posted a link to the book at wordofmouthradio.org. And we'd also love to hear from you. Have you a neglected parcel of woods around your home and not a clue how to manage it? Have you discovered yet another way to reap rewards from your family forest? You can post on our Facebook page, where the conversation is continuing all the time. Coming up, we'll hear about some innovative and unusual solutions for another land problem, the problem of public loitering, when Word of Mouth continues.